Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. Today we're going to talk with author and journalist V.B. Price about his just-published book, The Orphaned Land, New Mexico's Environment Since the Manhattan Project. V.B. Price, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
V.B., later in the show, I want to talk with you about some of the headline-grabbing material you write about. The 8 million gallons of jet fuel spilled at Kirtland Air Force Base, the findings of heightened radioactivity in and around Los Alamos, and possible trace amounts of radioactivity in the drinking water in Santa Fe. But I'd really like to start with this question. You're a poet. You're an author of other books. You teach architecture and constitutional law at UNM. Why this book?
It just seemed to me that every place in the world is dirty since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and now we are too. So what I tried to do was to put New Mexico in the context of a global environmental crisis and look at it as a microcosm of that crisis, and indeed it is.
You're talking about since the Manhattan Project, or since 1943.
Yeah.
I just have to assume that that was a difficult undertaking.
I started it at age 63, and I'm now 71, and it was an incredibly difficult undertaking. I worked at it day and night for many years, and I got depressed because the material was so upsetting. And when it came to me that I could really only write about the most superficial qualities of what was happening, I got really down. But then I thought small amounts are better than nothing. We have real problems here, and we have real problems all over the country with all kinds of pollution.
Yeah, so let's move on and talk about some of the specific problems. You know, we tend to hear a lot about the labs and nuclear problems, and this radio station does a good job of
sure does.
Of updating us on those issues.
Sure does.
But what we don't tend to hear a lot about is what you might call the day-to-day environmental problems. And for example, New Mexico has a lot of extractive industries because we're blessed with a lot of natural resources. But, you know, there's oil, gas, uranium, coal. You spend a lot of time in your book writing about those aspects. We don't tend to hear a lot about those. Why do you write about them, and what do you think we're missing?
Well, in general, I tried to cover the whole waterfront. I did water quality, I did mining, I did air pollution, I did toxic waste, I did environmental injustice, and I did urban and rural problems. And when you sort of go wide like that, you're always running into extractive industries. And a particular mindset which says basically that the ends, being profit margin, justify any means. So when you go, say, for instance, and you go west of Albuquerque, and I thought this was a preposterous number, but it proves to be true, there are about 1,000 open pit uranium mines. Still
1,000?
1,000, still unreclaimed, all up and around the Laguna and the Navajo Reservation. The Navajos never had cancer before the uranium mining boom in the 1950s. So you begin to think, my heavens, and then, you know, you hear all about fracking and unlined waste pits hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands, really, of derricks and pumps all over the San Juan Basin, the Permian Basin, roads. It's astonishing. And not even to mention the labs. And then you have the septic tanks, and you have the landfills. And really, you have the Four Corners, which in terms of air pollution is the dirtiest rural air probably in the country.
So I guess implicitly what you're saying is that when we don't concentrate on these things and we just look at the labs, say, we're missing a lot of what the possible harms to our environment might be.
A tremendous amount.
For example, what's the danger of an open pit uranium mine? For example?
Well, it's blowing uranium into our atmosphere. You know, the wind usually comes west, and it just.
I see. Well, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Well, yeah, the biggest problem is that we really don't know how bad it is. Nobody's really studied it before. One of the opportunities that New Mexico and lots of other places missed was that when you begin to make atomic weapons, you could have at the same time started to institute a series of investigations about the health impacts of low-level radiation and other kinds of radiation exposure. It would have been the absolute best thing we could have done here. I mean, we're a long-time health center. We didn't do that. Of course, they didn't do it at Rocky Flats either. They didn't do it at Hanford, Washington either. They didn't do it at Oak Ridge either. But we had an opportunity to really do something extraordinary for the health of the nation. And instead, we just went on with everybody else, denying potential problems.
I get that. I get the problem with, say, an open pit coal mine, because you could have residue and sludge and all these things draining into the water table. We have a lot of oil fields. We have a lot of gas fields. Are there environmental issues with regard to those? And
yes.
What are they?
Yes, there are.
That we miss.
The state is crisscrossed with many thousands of miles of pipelines. The pipelines convey natural gas, jet fuel, petroleum of products of all kinds. Outside of Carlsbad, I think maybe 12 or so years ago, a family was having a little camping expedition, 12 members of a family, and a natural gas pipeline burst. And they lit a match or something, and the whole thing blew up and killed all 12 of them. There are all kinds of hidden things like that. The biggest thing petroleum exploration and pumping is if you Google map, say, towns like Roswell or Artesia or even Eunice, and you get up high enough, you will see a virtual lacework of roads and pumps for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of square miles. That land is utterly ruined for anything other than that. You certainly couldn't run ahead of cattle on it, I don't think, because they have all of their waste in open pits. And so it's just a lot of things that we don't see. I mean,
so are these pits, is there monitoring of these pits? Or do we know how much, for example, pollution is going into the air from the operations, the diesel fuel pumping that goes on at these oil and gas fields? Do we have a sense of that? I mean,
I don't think
or
we do.
We don't.
I don't think we do. I think we know there have been many thousands of leaks from these pits, but I don't think we've ever really tried to assess the enormous impact on air quality. And if you go up to the Four Corners, you have two power plants, you have coal mines, and you have probably 30 to 40,000 pump jacks day and night, 24 hours a day. You know, it's like an L.A. traffic jam. It gets so bad up there that the ranchers stop running cattle because on their land they have these jacks going and they have these open pits and the cattle can't be kept out of them and it kills the cattle. And it's a nasty thing.
So I want to move on and talk about some of the headline issues that you raise in your book. But before I do that, I'd like to just mention that this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have in the studio today V.B. Price, who is a longtime New Mexico journalist. He's just published a book called The Orphaned Land. It's the history of the New Mexico environment since 1943. And V.B., one of the things you write about is really kind of shocking. It's sort of the shot not heard around the world, and that's 8 million gallons of jet fuel spilled at Kirtland Air Force Base over decades, I take it. And that's only 3 million gallons less than the Exxon Valdez. And you can probably go to many places in the world and they'll know about the Exxon Valdez. I think you can go to many places in New Mexico and they wouldn't know about the Kirtland oil spill.
This is an amazing thing. It's cheek by jowl with a major high-level middle-class suburb. They probably discovered it, or at least they said they did, in 1999. They repaired it, or at least they said they did, in 1999. They apparently didn't tell anybody until 2008 because they didn't want to worry us. Initially, they said there was 1 million gallons, and then there was 3 million gallons, and finally the state concluded that there was 8 million gallons. The stuff had gotten not only into the soil, obviously, but down into the aquifer. Now, this is millions of gallons of very expensive jet fuel. And you have to ask, where was their inventory? I guess this is the same the same kind of enterprise that buys $80 hammers and stuff. But still, you know, I mean, how could you let that go all those years? And this bill is, you know, although they try to minimize it, you just have to use your imagination a little bit. They have 106, the last time I heard, test wells trying to determine where this thing is going. And the place that it's going is inexorably, slowly, thank God, toward the sweet spot of our aquifer, somewhere up around Eubank and Gibson.
So one of the things that I really don't get is, as you say, they were very late to acknowledge it. They discovered it, I think you said, in 1999?
That's what I heard.
So, but it's not till 2010 that all of a sudden there's all this impetus to clean it up fully. How does that occur? I mean, you've got at least a million gallons, more than a million gallons, and it's dangerous to the water table. It's sitting right on the water table.
Sure. You know,
is there any explanation?
I have no explanation for it. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, it's the kind of thing where probably what they're doing is they're vaporizing the soil, so they're trying to get it out of the soil that way. But when you get into
what
the water,
what does it mean to vaporize the soil?
Well, you suck it off and you burn it.
Uh huh.
Or you release it in the atmosphere. But the water that's in the water table, I don't believe, unless they use reverse osmosis on that water, which is a kind of a desalinization process or a dialysis process, I don't think it'll ever be potable, that particular hunk of water that stuff is in. You can probably use it to wash your car, but that's it.
So it's not in the main Albuquerque aquifer?
Oh, it is.
Oh, it is in the main aquifer?
It is, yes. It is how deep it is, how far it's gone, how much is in there. That's what these 106 test wells are trying to figure out.
So why isn't this a bigger story? I mean, so you've been a journalist, you've been an editor, right, of a newspaper. Why don't we hear more about this?
Well, actually, you know, I have to say that once it was discovered, John Fleck is a
good man. Right?
He's an incredibly good environmental writer,
yeah.
And he writes for the Journal, and he's been covering this very, very well. But, you know, you can only do so much. I mean, this mm-hmm. is almost a national security issue. You know, this is the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hold their public meetings, on Air Force land, you know, so you have to have clearance and other things in order to get in. They're hardly open meetings. So, you know, even a great reporter like John has a trouble really – you know, learning about it.
It seems to me like one of the problems is, you know, you don't have the birds covered with oil. You don't have the tar washing up on the beach. I mean, we don't quite know what's going down underground.
It's invisible.
It's invisible.
It's invisible. And that's why I think environmental issues are so hard to deal with, because most of them, except for air pollution, the obvious kinds of air pollution, are invisible. Very hard to pin them down. And it's extremely hard to make direct cause and effect relationships between disease and pollution. The controls are non-existent. I mean, there's way too many variables involved.
So let me ask you about another headline issue, and this one sort of grabs everybody, and that's findings of elevated radioactivity in and around Los Alamos, and then trace amounts allegedly in the water in Santa Fe, supposedly from Los Alamos, anthropogenic, as they call it, man-made, and you can tell the difference, I guess, between man-made and not man-made. Let's start with Los Alamos, in and around Los Alamos, and can you talk to us a little bit about the reports that you describe in the book about those findings?
Okay, well, after the Cerro Grande fire, it was estimated by the state that there were more than 2,100 waste sites in the 34-mile precinct of Los Alamos Scientific Labs.
Waste sites being places where they put their waste. Yeah. Different places.
All different kinds. I mean, this is an industrial operation up there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's industrial solvents, there's radionuclides, there's all kinds of things. But the report, I think that's really the eye-opener, is something called the LAHDRA report. That's LAHDRA. And all you have to do is go online and type that in, and you will find this report online. It stands for the Los Alamos Historic Document Retrieval and Assessment Project. And it's run by the CDC, which is a highly, highly reputable federal agency. So in 1994, they got a call from the Department of Energy, and they were inquiring why there was so many rumors, persistent rumors about anecdotal information about so many cancers in Espanola Valley. So the CDC came out, and they couldn't really find the information they needed until it became apparent that Los Alamos itself had collected millions of documents that revealed the extent of their nuclear emissions in all different ways, little explosions, lots of pouring treated stuff, whatever that might mean, into the canyons, lots of fires and small explosions. So when they went and they looked, they eventually ran, I would say, hundreds of pages in seven-point type of all the examples and all the moments of these releases. It's really awesome, and these releases are about polonium, a highly toxic substance, and plutonium. So the report, in a kind of offhand remark, which I thought was stunning, said that that the releases at Los Alamos over a certain early period, which we're just now beginning to feel, I think, easily exceeded the releases at Hanford, Washington, Savannah River, and Rocky Flats combined.
So that's an astounding fact.
Astounding.
Completely contrary to what most of us would guess.
I think they're into the art of denial up there, you know, just as well as anybody else is. I mean, they, you know, they're run by companies and universities, and, you know, they're really good at spinning information. I don't think they're bad people or anything like that. I just think, you know, their goal is to win a war. You know, it was the Cold War. And so anything went. You know, the ends justified the means. I don't think you need to win wars by polluting the environment you're working in, nor make money by doing that either. But I think me and probably half the country in a tiny minority.
So what's the date of that?
That was released in 2010.
Now, you know, what's really curious is that I looked at a 2009 report where Los Alamos does this very extensive recapitulation of soil and water samples. Now, they don't talk about their toxic waste sites. They talk about their non-toxic waste sites. And in other words, they go places where they haven't been dumping. And they look at that, they look at the river, they look at soil samples, and they say in this report, as much as I can figure out, there's no problem. So does that square with this Lodger report that you looked at?
Not at all. I mean, there's a kind of almost a comic refrain of every time any news report appears about releases of radioactivity or solvents or other things into water tables or in the air, everybody always says, it doesn't matter who you are, there is no danger to public health here. This goes on over and over and over and over and over and over again. So the question I ask in this book, you know, is who do you believe?
Yeah, you know, and I think I mentioned to you when I first talked to you and asked you to come on the show, it's one of the reasons that I've hesitated to do a show on this subject, because I never know who to believe.
I don't think anybody knows who to believe. Except there are a few sort of, I think, basic standards that one might apply. You know, I think people would bristle at this, but I think science for hire is biased science. It's going to get the kind of results and say the kind of things and do the kind of tests that their employers want. I think, probably in my own judgment anyway, the kinds of NGOs that we have in New Mexico are more trustworthy in the long run than science for hire. And maybe, you know, I'm sure this is a controversial view.
Yeah, I want to talk to you more about that, but let me just mention, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz. I'm very pleased to have Bebe Price on the show today. Bebe has written a history of the New Mexico environment called The Orphaned Land from 1943 to date. this 2009 report that I looked at. I mean, you'd have to believe in an incredible conspiracy to believe that scientists were making this stuff up. I mean, they send the report to the feds. They send it to the New Mexico Environment Department. There's all kinds of scientists who are doing this studying. Yes, they have an agenda, but, you know, the NGOs have an agenda, which is to challenge places like Los Alamos. And so that really gets down to, I guess, trust, and who do you believe?
It does get down to trust. I'm not a conspiracy theorist anyway. I do believe in culture, however, and Los Alamos has a particular culture. It's a culture of great pride. They did an incredible job. They basically won the Cold War for us. But when it comes to what you do with your trash, your detritus, that's a very different thing. Nobody wants to look at that. Nobody wants to deal with it. Nobody wants to admit it.
You know, it's interesting because to me that's one of the arguments for the WIP site.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you know, maybe the WIP site isn't in the perfect place, but when you look at, for example, Sandia National Labs mixed waste landfill, I mean, for years they told us there wasn't a problem. Now they say it's too dangerous to move. Los Alamos, as you say, and it's not controverted, there are all kinds of waste sites where radioactive substances have been dumped and water gets into that when there's a storm. And there's also a waste site in the South Valley.
Sure.
Where nuclear work was done, where waste continues to be. So it seems to me the people doing the experimenting and the scientific work, they're not that interested in disposing of it. Isn't it better to have something like WIP, where at least the people are focused on trying to get rid of it in the best way possible?
Sure. The strange thing about WIP is that it only will handle about, I think the number is 2% of all that particular kind of low level
transuranic waste, which is not hot waste, right?
Well, actually, it's the stuff that's been touched by hot waste, basically.
Touched by hot waste.
So, but the question is, you know, is if plutonium and all that stuff isn't all that dangerous, and if only little tiny bits of it are in the water, and we shouldn't worry about it because it's only trace elements, why do you put stuff that's only been touched by this stuff into big barrels and bury it a half a mile under the ground? I mean, isn't that kind of inconsistent? I've always wondered about that and scratched my head. But then again, this is all about scratching your head. You know, I mean, this is, you know, these guys are the gods. You know, they're the experts. They're the guys in the white coats.
Isn't it better to put it a half a mile under the ground than to dump it all over the place at Sandia and Los Alamos in the South Valley of Albuquerque?
Got to do something with it.
No one wants to deal with it.
Nobody anywhere in the country wants to deal with it.
Exactly.
I'm not sure this was the best place to put it, but that's a whole other issue. But still, if it's so bad that it has to go down there, then what makes the stuff on top of the ground less dangerous? Well, obviously nothing. I mean, it's a logical inconsistency.
So let me move. I don't want to end the show without talking about the water in Santa Fe. Because as I understand it, there was a 2007 water quality report by the Water Authority in Santa Fe saying there were trace amounts of radioactive elements in the in the drinking water.
Yeah, it was in the water bill, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. It came out with the water bill.
Yeah.
Now, that is scary stuff. Now, but since then, I've looked, and they say, you know, basically, the elements that are found are naturally occurring elements. There's nothing to worry about. They say they've had all kinds of people look at it. They send it to the EPA. I guess, again, I mean, I understand one can question. There's an inconsistency. But how do you ever disprove one of these things? If the New Mexico Environmental Department can't be believed, and if the EPA can't believe, and if the Santa Fe Water Company itself can't be believed, I mean, these things just sort of linger and scare us forever.
That's totally right. It does have a lot to do with politics. When Richardson was governor, his head of the Department of the Environment produced reports that said that both Los Alamos and Sandia were eminent dangers to the public health. You can go online and find those things. They signed contracts to clean certain things up. This was, oh my God, it caused incredible upheaval and warfare and yelling and screaming and all the rest. But it does come down to a question. who do you believe? I mean, has Los Alamos been pouring stuff down those canyons, dumping it into the canyons for years and years and years and decades
and decades?
They say
they acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Right?
So where does it go? And indeed, how dangerous is a trace amount of plutonium? Well, it's not one trace amount. It's millions of trace amounts. I mean, how many, you know, what's dangerous? What is the logic? See, the only way that we have, that Joe Citizen has, if I can use that awful term, to counteract experts is to apply basic logic. Is this argument, not the science, is the argument that they're using to explain the science logical? Is it consistent? Is it believable? I don't think it's any one of those.
Okay, so the water argument, and I'm probably not the best person to articulate it, is that they say there's naturally occurring uranium. That's why there's uranium mining in New Mexico. There's naturally occurring uranium and other substances that occur in and around the water that Santa Fe uses.
And they,
they argue that you can tell the difference between natural occurring uranium and anthropogenic radioactive elements from Los Alamos, and they say it's not coming from Los Alamos. And then you've got this Los Alamos report that supposedly looks at the river and the fish and the plants in the river and say it's all below any reasonable level of concern. So you're not buying it.
No. No, I'm not. I'm concerned. I think the thing that I'm the most concerned about is that every time anybody mentions anything like this, they go back to an old fallback position. This is all fallout from Utah and Nevada tests, as if they were doing nothing, as if they had never made a plutonium pit, as if they didn't have all those big buildings, if they didn't have all those waste sites. I mean, it's just silly, and I hate to say that, but it is. It's ludicrous.
So let me ask you this. We're nearing the end of the show, and I'd like you to look into the future. And you have a chapter in your book about looking into the future.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really concerns me about the environment is there used to be kind of agreement on, you know, protecting the environment. But now it seems to have become a very highly partisan issue, not only in New Mexico, but throughout the country. But, you know, we have a current administration that essentially ran against environmental regulations, said we needed to be open for business. That was appealing to many people.
Sure.
So where do you think we're going with environmental regulations in New Mexico? Where are we headed, do you think, in New Mexico and in the country?
I think we're in for a bad patch. I think that any business that cannot operate productively without paying for its pollution should fail. Just like any other business. This is a cost of doing business. Don't produce the stuff, and if you do, clean it up. Pay it yourself rather than have us pay for it, which is what they rely on.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much, V.B. Price. V.B. Price is the author of a just published book called The Orphan Land. It's a history of New Mexico over the last 50 or more years. I would also like to thank my engineer today, Joe Green.
Me too.
Thanks also to my producer, John Burgund. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. A podcast of this and other locally produced shows can be found at KUNM.org. Podcasts of my older shows can be found at the Spitz Report on the web. Thank you for listening. See you next time.